Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
No.
I could help you cross the street.
No.
I could help you cross your yard.
No.
I could help you cross your porch.
No.
Well, I gotta help you cross something.
No, I'm doing fine.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54.
Slow down.
Sweat Lodge 12.
Kid!
Are you in need of
Thank
any
you, but I don't need
today?
Any help.
So hi and welcome to the Undie Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Douglas.
Yeah, Damien's missing.
Wait. No, he's still not here.
You think he's annoyed that we spelled his name with a Y instead of an I?
You spelled his name with a Y?
we were joking about how Damien spelled with a Y, and then we started making fun about E-O-N, blah, blah, whatever.
I don't quite remember this, but okay. Yes, we did say that last week, didn't we?
A couple weeks back, I believe.
Clearly, I have no memory of this event.
More alcohol. So, right, with Damien gone, we're here to hold down the fort, and we'll be doing what we do best, which is not much at all.
Will we finish it?
Yes.
Okay. Good to go.
I guess we can start as usual with what we've been watching. Douglas, what have you been watching?
What have I been watching? Well, this week it is a bit of a short list. This week, really, I had two main items. One was a TV show that I've been meaning to watch for a long time, especially because of two main reasons. Who is in it and what channel it was on? It originally aired on FX. And it starred Minnie Driver. Not really the reason I wanted to watch it, but the main reason was Eddie Izzard. I think he's one of the most hilarious guys around. But this is a serious show, and it's called The Riches.
Do they talk about the evil giraffe?
No, they do not. There is no reference of giraffes eating more leaves than they should. Nothing along those lines, which is probably why I don't like this show that much. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. This show reminds me a lot of Big Love. Especially, even in its actual content, you've got a family, which is kind of outside of the norm, which is made up of Eddie Izzard and Minnie Driver as mommy and daddy, and then you've got three children. They are travelers or gypsies, and they meet up into an accident and then essentially take over the lives of some rich people who were involved in that accident, who died. So they are gypsies who are now pretending to be what they call, I think, buffers. And every once in a while, you've got people from their world, other gypsy people, trying to kind of creep in on what they've got going. And all sorts of drama ensues. And so it's very much like Big Love in that sense, with the whole two worlds divided, and they're not quite mainstream or whatever. But also, like Big Love, it really isn't that great either. I'm not sure why I watched this show for as long as I did, because I watched the whole first season, and I don't think I'm going to be continuing to the second. I believe there's a second. I don't think I'm going to watch it. I know it got cancelled. I suppose FX cancels shows for real reasons sometimes. I mean, Terry Osmite,
I think we need to give up on mentioning Terry for a while.
Put it in a pantheon,
because, you know, we've been crying a lot because of that show, and we need to save our tears. We need to find other reasons to cry.
Okay, I hear you. Anyway, that show, not that great. One other thing that I watched this week, which actually also wasn't that great, but I enjoyed infinitely more, was a movie called Friends with Benefits. It starred Mila Kunis and Justin Timberlake.
And Woody Harrelson.
And a lot of other people. Well, it didn't star them, but it had a lot of cameos from
a
lot of
people. Woody Harrelson is in a movie, it stars him.
This is true. So this movie, for the first, say, hour, is perfect. It's hilarious. It's light. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It plays well on Justin Timberlake's
musical background.
No, not his music. I'm not even talking about it. I'm talking about like his natural comedic nature. I think, listen, if this kid was not who he is now, right? If he was not Justin Timberlake, I used to be on NSYNC, I am now like superstar of the world, this kid would fit in perfectly to Saturday Night Live. It would be Justin Timberlake featuring the Saturday Night Live actors. This guy
is
so funny.
So are you saying that he sang Dick in a Box?
Actually, no, I'm not saying that. And not only am I saying that, I'm also saying that this movie could have done well with a song at the end. I'm very upset because they started off this movie with a scene with Andy Samberg in it. And how could they have any medium with both Justin Timberlake and Andy Samberg and not have some sort of song about mother loving with dicks in boxes and, you know, three ways? I don't understand how you could not have some sort of great song in the end, but they didn't, and I shed a couple tears for that. But anyway, back to the movie. This movie was really good for the first hour, but then once it kind of realized, okay, I need to stop being funny and actually do what I came here to do, I got upset, because what it came here to do was what I knew was going to be bad, and was bad. It was that, you know, regular old movie that Natalie Portman's version of this film did horribly at
as
well.
Anyone's version of this film.
Yes, but Portman had one like last month.
That last 20 to 30 minutes after the first hour of fantastic mm-hmm. comedy, that isn't a fault of the fact that they were trying to be an R-rated, we'll talk about sex all the time comedy. It's the fault of the romantic comedy.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's because it became the movie that it was supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to something else. Right? So
you pretend like you didn't know it was coming.
I didn't. To tell you the truth, I didn't. You know why?
Why?
Because it tricked me. Exactly. So
well,
I went.
Mila Kunis flashed you.
No. I went. I wish she flashed me. She didn't flash me. Bitch. she. See, you got me talking in cheese now. This movie, when I went in, like right before the opening scene, I knew for a fact it would be that same movie that it turned out to be. But slowly but surely, it proved me wrong. Scene after scene, it was, dare I say, good. And so when it hit intermission, which we have in Jamaica for some god awful reason, I don't know why, but when it hit intermission, I could find no flaw, other than of course that there was no song yet between JT and Adam, or Andy, sorry, Samberg. So at that point I said, okay, maybe I let my guard down, maybe I can hope and pray and wish.
So are you saying that you fell in love with Justin Timberlake?
Oh, I did that a long time ago. I admit that freely. But yes, this movie turned out to be bad. It tricked me to think that it would have been good. But after all of that, I still kind of enjoyed it. And if you put me in front of it again, I'll probably watch it.
I liked it because I enjoyed it. Like, I know that it's not going to be the greatest movie ever. And I know it's going to have that third act. But at the same time, I just loved that first two acts so much that that I was okay with it doing that to me. You know? It's like going somewhere and then you find out you got into a fight, you had the big best fun ever, and at the end of the night, they're like, okay, the cost of all of this is, and you see the bill, and you're like, alright.
I'll pay that, it was worth it. Yeah, that's true.
Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I watched some more Children's Hospital. It's still good. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, this week I saw a ton of movies, but I'm only going to mention a few. First of all, I guess to, you know, bring the art crowd back into the show, I saw Stanley Kubrick's final film, Eyes Wide Shut, which stars Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
Wait, sorry. This is a movie with Tom Cruise?
Yes.
And you're using it to bring back the art crowd?
No, I said Stanley Kubrick first.
This is Tom Cruise.
No, Stanley Kubrick trumps everything else, don't you know? Don't you know that? You mention Kubrick and immediately the movie becomes Oscar-nominated immediately.
Okay.
Maybe it didn't win Best Actor or Best Actress. I'm not sure. I haven't checked. I remember hearing about this movie when I was in high school. A lot of people told me about this movie and they were saying, oh my goodness, it's so amazing. And of course, it was because all of these children were in high school and they were looking at all the ass and the tits that there are in this movie. But as a Stanley Kubrick pretty much hater on this podcast, I have to say I kind of like this movie.
You're a hater of Stanley Kubrick?
Pretty much.
But what about, I can't remember the name of it, but the Kirk Douglas film.
Path of Glory. That came after the hate began. That was trying to tell me that I shouldn't hate him. But then a few weeks, like about a month ago, Damien made us watch Barry Lyndon, and the hate just came pouring back.
I didn't watch that movie.
So that's why you ran away on that episode. Maybe that's why Damien isn't here today.
Maybe. You love The Shining.
I do love The Shining, but that was before I knew Kubrick's name and I could shout it at him. But no, it's really movies like the ones that when you ask someone, what Kubrick movies should I watch?
That's true. You're going to get the three big ones. You're going to get 2001.
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, and Full Metal Jacket.
I mean, I actually kind of like Full Metal Jacket, but those first two, I loathe.
You know what's funny? Full Metal Jacket suffers from the same, for me, or at least at the time when I saw it a long time ago, suffers from the same problem that Justin Timberlake's movie suffered from. I loved the first half of this movie, the training section. That was amazing. Probably mostly because it was a comedy. And then...
because you found it funny.
I found it funny. I know it's not a comedy, but I laughed. And then they got into the fight.
I didn't know they packed shit.
And I was like...
I didn't know they piled shit that high.
Ah, Gomer Pyle. Yeah, then they got to the fighting and I was like, see you later.
No, but like this movie, Eyes Wide Shut, like I feel like I really need to watch it again to fully grasp everything about it. But what I really enjoyed is that it didn't feel a need to explain itself. It was about this guy who was apparently having issues with his wife. Like they don't seem like Blue Valentine level of gone out the window, but they're having some sort of issues. And one evening he stumbles across this secret society where they have lots of naked women all over the place. And it's about how this event sort of affects him. And then he tries to figure out what this whole thing was about. And as he goes around trying to find out, he gets to more and more dead ends. And then the movie ends with this big explanation scene where someone who is close to the doctor, who you meet early on in the movie, talks to him about that night and kind of explains things. But at the same time, the movie never confirms or denies anything that guy explains. So you can take what he tells you as truth or as something that he's telling him because he'll accept it and move on with his life. And that's kind of where the movie ends, and you don't really know what's going on, which is why I kind of feel like I really want to watch it again to see if there's more to it now that I know what's happening, to check it out. But at the same time, I really enjoyed it. It's a 2.5 hour movie, but I love the pacing. I love the general vibe of the film, and tits and ass. That's kind of nice to have somewhere in the middle.
Andrew, internet.
I also watched this movie, Insidious.
Next.
It's a movie that the internet has been talking about all year long. It's like everyone has been raving about it as the horror movie of the year, and we on the podcast are not fans of horror. This isn't a movie that I would really recommend to people like Damien, because the problem that we have with horror is very prevalent in this film. What I enjoyed about this movie was that it goes for that really eerie vibe, and it gets there really well for most of the movie. For like the first two acts, that movie is perfectly creepy, and it works.
I watched the first half hour of this movie with you. Mm-hmm. Don't lie.
I'm not lying. That's how I personally feel about this movie. It works. When you get to the third act, where they start to give you an explanation, this movie falls completely short. It is so haphazardly laughable in that section that it almost ruins the fact that the first two acts were kind of amazing. And what annoyed me the most was the whole thing about the movie is that they think the house is haunted, and then eventually they find out, you find it out in the trailer and most of the marketing, so if you know anything about this movie you're going to know this, they find out that it's actually their son that's haunted, right? And they get this woman to come in who eventually tells them this, and she can apparently see spirits and shit, but you don't really see what she sees. She just sees it, and then she tells this other guy what she's seen, and that guy will draw what she sees. And what that guy drew for the spirit that was haunting the child was scarier than eventually towards the end of the movie where you actually see the spirit. Like that spirit that we see physically at towards that third act looked like you could have bought that in a costume shop out here. And that was kind of disappointing. But otherwise, the movie, it kind of succeeds. So I can see how, like, deadbeat horror fans would love this movie.
You're calling horror fans deadbeats?
I guess that was a bad word, wasn't it?
You deadbeat horror fans.
Yes, it was deadbeats. And one more movie I want to mention. Damien kept talking to me about it. He talked to me about this movie a while back when I mentioned I had seen Le Mans, the Steve McQueen driving movie. And it's also a movie that's referenced heavily in one of our favorite, I wouldn't say one of our favorite, but one of the more enjoyed Tarantino films, Death Proof. I watched Vanishing Point.
Okay, alright. Can I tell you? So I can see your list from here, but clearly I have some sort of odd vantage point, because that's what I saw in in that last list item. And I was like, really? Is he really talking about Vantage Point? Which I believe Vantage Point is a movie with like Dennis Quaid as the president, right? And you see the same
thing. I've actually never seen that movie, but neither have I.
That's what it is.
And all sorts of other people are in it, and they just find 10 different cameras and show you the 10 different versions.
Yeah,
I assume that movie was boring. But anyways, Vanishing Point.
Okay.
It's a cult classic from the 70s. They keep talking about it in Death Proof. I actually rewatched Death Proof earlier this week, which helped spurn on this watching on Vanishing Point, and I fucking hated this movie. You know, there's these movies from the 70s where they completely refuse to add a plot to the movie. The whole idea of this film is that the guy is he works for a car service who delivers cars across America. So he'll pick up a car in one state and drop it and drive it to another state and just drop it off there. And so that's how the movie is. He picks up the Challenger, the with the stock 440 engine, the white Challenger, and he's supposed to drive it across country. And that's the movie. The difference is, he decides to bet this man that he's going to do it in like 15 hours. And that's almost impossible, so he drives at ridiculous speeds. And he gets the police going after him. And it becomes this weird thing where it's like, what's that movie? Smokey and the Bandit. With the police coming after him, getting more and more aggressive throughout the movie. And then he'll meet certain people. There'll be random naked women. There'll be flashbacks to him as a motorbike rider or a stunt driver or a police officer or all sorts of madness. And none of it, you really don't care about any of that. You're watching it for the driving, and honestly, I wasn't interested in any of it. Like, it just never struck me. Like, I talked about Bullet a long time ago, and I mentioned how much I didn't like that movie. However, how much I really enjoyed that chase sequence that the movie is famous for. This movie, which is basically a 90-minute chase sequence, had no moments during the driving that I was like, that looks amazing.
So what you're saying to me is that Vanishing Point is probably one of the best movies ever. So based on the fact that you do not like Bullet at all, I must just disregard your opinion completely.
I guess.
Okay.
I guess one other thing I kind of want to mention, just as a side note, I saw the first episode for the Thundercats reboot on Cartoon Network. And I think this show is special because it makes me laugh. It makes me cry. And it's really, really bad. Like, it makes me question my childhood. Which I remember Damien telling us a long time ago to stop going back to those things. Like, it's just going to hurt. It hurts.
Damien doesn't know how thick my nostalgia goggles are.
First show that I want to talk about is one that is really difficult to understand, and it's called Like Crazy, and that's because you can't really hear it.
Day, I thought I understood it, but I didn't, not really. Only the smudgeness of it, the eagerness of it. Idea of it, you and me.
Stars Anton Yelchin and some chick I don't know, and Jennifer Lawrence. No, it's Felicity something. I don't know. And Jennifer Lawrence.
You're not helping you out there.
You're not helping me out. and apparently, he played at Sundance, and certain people who went to Sundance liked the movie. Douglas, what do you think about this trailer? Okay. And you're not allowed to mention the fact that Anton Yelchin is in it.
Shut up. This trailer. You've really mentioned everything that I wanted to mention about this trailer, but I'm going to mention it anyway. This trailer is completely inaudible. I could not hear anything. I actually cannot tell you what this movie is about, or I can tell you what I think it's about based on absolutely nothing that these people said. I couldn't hear what they said. The only thing I could hear was the song in the background, which, by the way, is a good song. I don't know who sings this, but this is an Elvis cover. Sounds kind of nice. Anyway, this movie stars Anton Yelchin, did you say, was in this movie?
No, it actually wasn't Anton Yelchin. This movie had...
Alright, shut the fuck up. Anton Yelchin is in this movie. That's all they needed to tell me. They didn't need to put any nice song. They didn't need to do any dialogue. No sort of showing me what this movie is about. Just one picture of Anton Yelchin, and just text below saying he is in this movie. this movie comes out soon, and I'd have been good. I don't know why, but I really do like this guy. Even that average movie with him and Susan Sarandon's daughter,
Middle of Nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't mind as much, or I didn't hate as much as I should have.
Well, you hate on Friends with Benefits.
I know, right? But no, I don't hate on Friends with Benefits.
No, but you were harder on Friends with Benefits than you were
fair
on
enough.
Middle of Nowhere.
Fair enough. But yeah, that's all I really needed to know. So they gave me all the info.
You said you don't know what this movie is about because the trailer's inaudible, and that's completely true.
No, that's not what I said. Well, what I was saying is that I couldn't hear what they were saying. I could venture a guess to say that this is some sort of love story and teenage love, whatever, just based on what I see and the song that's playing, but I couldn't tell you what they were saying to each other.
So, according to IMDb,
yeah,
the plot synopsis of this film is a British college student falls for an American student, only to be separated from him when she's banned from the U.S. after overstaying her visa.
Well, we've got international incidents and Anton Yelchin. I'm down. Okay, no, that story sounds a little bit weird. But anyway, whatever. I'll watch this movie.
I don't know. Like, the first time I watched this trailer, I told you, I had my headphones on listening to it. So I could kind of hear it more. But I don't remember what they said. Or nothing struck me while I was watching the trailer at that time. All that really popped out at me was the fact that it was at Sundance. And I know a couple of the cast members that I really like. I.e. Jennifer Lawrence and Anton Yelchin.
Other way around. Anton Yelchin's build first.
I personally build Lawrence first.
I was telling you that that's how it should be. Right? I don't care what your opinion is. You just told me you didn't like Bullet. You don't get an opinion anymore.
So therefore, by that logic, then everything I say should be turned around.
Only what I think is wrong.
Okay. yeah, this trailer, it just does so many things wrong for me to actually want to watch this movie. I mean, I'm going to watch it because of the kind of movie it is.
Because of Anton Yelchin. It's that
kind of movie where everyone is going to be talking about it come Oscar time and complaining, why wasn't this movie nominated? And I'm going to watch it just to agree or disagree with all of those people. But based on this trailer, I'd be like, you know what? I can skip this one and watch it like 5 years from now. Forget about how horrible this trailer is and actually enjoy it for what it is. And Jennifer Lawrence is better than Anton Yelchin. Otherwise, this week in trailers, there was the trailer for the new George Clooney film, The Ides of March, starring Ryan Gosling, George Clooney, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I think Paul Giamatti's in this movie as well. And they're all politicians or something.
You okay?
We're gonna be fine. We have to do it. It's the right thing to do, and nothing bad happens when you're doing the right thing.
Is this your personal theory? Because I can shoot holes in it.
Well, there's exceptions to every rule. Who's this?
Tom Duffy.
You got a couple of minutes? I'd like to sit down with you.
I can't be talking to you.
You got something the other guys don't have. You exude something. You draw people in.
You're the big man on campus. I'm just a lowly intern.
What time you gotta work tomorrow?
9 a.m.
I thought I was being smooth and subtle.
No, you're pretty forward.
You have an idea how to tie a tie.
No, not a clue.
You got the best media mind in the country. All the reporters love you.
If your boy wins, you get a job in the White House. He loses, you're back at a consulting firm.
I've worked on more campaigns than most people have. By the time they're 40, he's the only one that's going to actually make a difference in people's lives.
Either we're going to lead the world or we are going to bury our heads in the sand.
You're my brain trust.
So how are we doing?
What do you think, Stevie?
I think it's ours to the taking.
You are working for the wrong man.
I want you to work for us.
Paul's my friend.
There's only one thing I value in this world, and that's loyalty. Without it, you're nothing.
Let's see if you can manage to talk about this trailer without mentioning Mr. Gosling.
I'm not saying anything until you take back what you just said a while
ago. Alright, so I'll talk about the trailer.
No, you challenge me, and I unfortunately cannot accept that challenge.
I fail
utterly, completely, and with no regrets.
Hold on. Before you even get into the trailer, I'm thinking about Ryan Gosling, yes. Right? Another movie which actually came out recently in the States and hopefully we'll get soon is
Crazy
Stupid Love, yeah, which he is in.
Yeah.
And in the trailer, which we spoke about a while back,
mm-hmm,
there is a moment where they are, Steve Carell and Ryan Gosling are in what looks like a locker room to, I don't know, must be a work or exercise gym or whatever. And Ryan Gosling is standing up bare naked, just his cock in Steve Carell's face, and he asks if this is a problem for him. Would that be a problem for you if you were Steve Carell?
No.
Okay, no, you can continue talking about that. I'm taking away the challenge.
Thank you, sir. This movie, I can tell you that I love this movie. I haven't watched it yet, but it doesn't really matter. Ryan Gosling is in the movie. Done. I don't know what to tell you about this movie. It has a lot of actors that I like. It also has George Clooney, who is kind of like an on and off again, on again, off again kind of guy for me. I think that I generally am drawn to his persona that he uses in all of his movies, but I don't think it works well all of the time. And essentially, it only works when the movie is written for somebody like him. And I guess politician, that sounds like a George Clooney kind of guy. So hopefully he will work out in this one. Also, like I said, we've got lots of people that I love. Giamatti's in this movie, as you say. Seymour Hoffman is in here. It's got star power. It's got a story that could be good. You know, it shows like that. It's got a lot of ins and outs to it, a lot of conflicts. So I'm hopeful. Also, Ryan Gosling is in this movie. I want to watch it.
George Clooney, you talked about him as an on and off actor and having a certain persona to him. I remember listening to, I can't remember which director it was, talking about George Clooney, and he summed him up perfectly for me in being our age. He's our generation's Cary Grant. He is that kind of old school Hollywood actor who, I don't know what it is he does, but in almost every movie, no matter how good, bad, or in between it is, his persona that he plays is just one that you want to love. You want to cheer him on in every movie. And from movies like Michael Clayton to The Good German, all the way back to... just ruined it.
What's that?
I had the name of the movie in my head and I just lost it.
While you think of it, I just realized that there is actually one exception to that rule of him being the same person over and over again,
mm-hmm,
and that one exception is Miles Massey. In
generally whenever he does the coin comedies he's slightly different, but he still has that gravitas that actors have sometimes on screen. And the movie I was thinking about was Ocean's 11.
Really, that's the movie that you anyway.
he just draws you into the movie. And as a director, he's been very specific about the kind of movies he does as a director. Actually, no, he hasn't. He's done 3 movies so far. One of them, the first one was Good Night, Good Luck, which I don't think we liked that much.
I actually don't remember much of it.
I kind of want to rewatch it to see.
It's been a long time.
I bought it, and I watched it when I bought it. And I remember not falling in love with it that much. But understanding that George Clooney definitely had an idea of what he wanted in a movie.
All I remember is RDJ's in a movie. I can't.
I just keep remembering the guy who was sitting underneath George Clooney and telling him, you can go now. You know, he was tapping his foot to tell him when he has to stop for a commercial or whatever. And stuff like that. And then the next movie he directed was Leatherheads, which I really didn't like. Which I felt was George Clooney attempting to make a Coen Brothers comedy without the Coen Brothers.
That movie was stupid.
But he didn't write that movie though, which kind of leads me to believe that that one was very much a studio movie, where he did it for the studio so he could do more of his crazy his kind of movies that he wants to do. And this is the next movie that he's directed, which he actually wrote. He wrote Good Night, Good Luck. He's written this movie, and it's very political. He definitely has an eye for the political films.
Can I ask you a question? Who directed Confessions of a Dangerous Mind? Was it Soderbergh?
That was not Soderbergh. That, oh my goodness, I do not remember that person's name. That definitely wasn't Soderbergh. I would have remembered it if it was Soderbergh. Oh shit, that was Clooney.
That's what I thought, which is why I asked the question. Because I was like, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Soderbergh is the one that directed it. That's
Clooney,
the one
that was the first one. I totally misread. I'm looking on his IMDb page and I just jumped Good Night, Good Luck. That's number one, because I know that that's his movie. Shit, you are right. Confessions of a Dangerous Man. I remember liking that movie a lot when I first saw it.
I've seen it a couple of times, and every time I watched it, I remember.
Once again, another movie which has a political thread to it. It's definitely not as political as what this movie, The Ides of March, is proposing, or Good Night, Good Luck. But it has the diplomacy of the spy world, where, you know, we have to make sure who we're targeting and that everything's A-OK before we do stuff. But yeah, that's the one thing that's drawing me into this movie, other than the stellar cast, which you mentioned, in that I'm interested to see George Clooney's take on politics. Because this is the first time where he's being so blunt about politics. He's going directly to being a politician, to being a presidential candidate, and talking about those people who help get presidential candidates to become presidents. And that's what the movie is about. It's about Ryan Gosling, who is the campaign manager kind of guy. I don't know if that's exactly his title in the movie. And it looks like he's flip-flopping from side to side throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least at one point in the movie. And it becomes very revenge-like. It looks like it can become very revenge-like between the fact that he switched sides and they're threatening that he's never going to find a job and he's not loyal and all sorts of madness. And I'm interested in it just for the idea of seeing George Clooney's take on this topic directly, as opposed to listening to him in an interview saying it out loud. Otherwise, I think his trailer is kind of underwhelming.
What are you talking about? Ryan Gosling is in his trailer.
Don't you think you kind of hate that whenever trailers, like when you watch a trailer and you forget like your association to any name or any fact in the trailer?
Mm-hmm.
When the trailer itself is just kind of like, you're like, oh, okay. But when you look at all of those factors, like director, writer, actor, they're talking about this topic, which I've been a fan of forever, and stuff like that. And you start to extrapolate on those things as opposed to the fact that the trailer actually sold you.
Yeah, I do hate that. And I guess there's a little bit of that in this trailer, not a huge amount, but you know which trailer recently did that to me was Soderbergh's trailer, the fighting one.
What's Haywire. It called?
Haywire. That trailer is disgustingly horrible. And yet, I'm probably going to watch it. You know why? Because Soderbergh directed it. Because Ewan McGregor is in it. Because Bono is in it. Because, you know, all sorts of foolishness.
I bet he's not in that movie for more than 10 minutes.
I know. Fassbender's probably like, I will give you a divorce. Oh no, I didn't give you a divorce. I'm dead. That's probably all it is.
Tumor. Gabriel's long-term memory stops at a certain point.
Like it's not even him.
I'm Diane Daly. I'm a music therapist.
I was hoping to talk to you about my son.
We may be able to use music as a tool to reawaken parts of his memory.
First time I heard this song, it spoke to me. All the craziness, you know? All the possibilities.
These musicians connect him to a time and a place.
Hi, I'm Gabriel.
I'm Celia.
Dylan, man, he gets it.
You get it too, Gabriel. All the kids,
they want to die. You're using music to bring him back to a time when he fell apart. Find some music that can bring him back to a time when things were right.
It doesn't work that way.
You're always going on as if you're the only one that has memories worth recording.
This week I asked us to watch his latest film out on DVD, The Music Never Stopped. And it's about this guy, this 35-year-old or so guy, Gabriel, who apparently suffers from a brain tumor and eventually has long-term amnesia, where he can no longer make any sort of new memories and has trouble accessing his old memories. However, due to their family's perseverance, they find out that he has a particular association with music, and therefore his father, who basically wants a relationship with his son again, can bring back that enthusiastic son that he had for periods of 3 to 5 minutes by just playing music that he loves. And it brings about that idea, which we all know but we don't really talk about that much, which is our relationship with art. In that, whenever we see certain pieces of art again, it brings us back to the time that that art becomes was relevant in our lives. Whether it be that it was just playing in the background and something monumental happened to us, or it changed something about us by being in that moment. The question I have for you is not necessarily about the film, but about the idea of art taking us back just by being played again. And what songs, movies, pictures, I'm going to open it up to any kinds of art. Is there any sort of art that just takes you back to that moment and you don't even think about the song as much as you're thinking about that moment that you first heard that song or saw that movie or thought about that picture?
Yeah, of course. For me, it's more a movies and music thing as opposed to, say, maybe an art thing, because I just haven't really gotten that much into art. I think everybody has that. For example, when I think of The Godfather, or when I watch Godfather, sometimes I think back to the first time I saw it when I was in college, and I was watching it with my friend Jeff, who at the time was rooming with an asshole who eventually became known across campus, which was amazing. Like, people he didn't know knew him as Pretentious Rob. And I remember we were watching the second movie. We were in the middle of watching it because Jeff found out and got upset with me, and rightfully so, that I had not watched these movies, and so he was forcing me to watch them.
Thank you, Jeff.
Funnily enough, when I started watching the third one, I was like, oh, I've seen this one already. But we were watching the second movie, and he walks in the room, and he just turns it off. And he's like, oh, I'm going to sleep now. And we're like, what the hell is wrong with you? But we're like, you know what? Do they want to cause a trouble, whatever, whatever. I can't deal with the fighting. Let's go downstairs. And he followed us downstairs in nothing but his robe. And I think there was a moment when he crossed his legs. And anyway, yeah, so we were upset that night. But anyway, like, you know, things like that. And sometimes it's not so funny or so, like, eventful. Like, yeah, there are songs where sometimes I'll hear them and I remember walking down a hallway while I was listening to it once. So it's just weird like that. But yes, that does occur with me, at least.
I think one film which I think about right now as I'm trying to figure out a story to tell, generally when it comes to music and I hear music, I hear songs, like, I don't know what it is, maybe it's the film buff in me, in that I try to associate songs with movies, and it's there's so many songs which are in like 5 billion movies, but sometimes I'll pick one movie to associate it with. And one song in particular, and God help me, I can't remember the name of the song, is from, is in Christmas movie, Love Actually.
I know the song that you're talking about.
Because I've told you about this.
Well, no, but because it's the big song in the movie. Is Christmas Is All Around?
Nope, that's not the song I'm going to talk
about. The original is Love Is
nope.
All Around.
Nope, that's not what I'm going
to talk about. Okay, alright.
In the scene where Hugh Grant is alone in his presidential building, house, whatever, and the song comes on, Don't Stop, da 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 da, and he starts to dance to this song throughout the house,
yeah.
And eventually, like, the maid sees him or something and he stops. You know, he has that moment where he pretends like he wasn't doing anything. That song always makes me think of that movie and that scene. And that movie makes me think of the time where I first saw... I'm trying to go... makes me think of the first time I saw that movie, which was Under Duress. I was at Lawrence, at Lawrence University, and I didn't want to watch this movie. I was just like, fuck me, not another romantic... rubbish movie where every woman is going to fall in love with a guy because he has a British accent. And 6 women made me watch this movie.
Not just a British accent, but also a big dong.
6 of my female friends just went, Andrew, we're all watching this movie. And as Damien has rightfully mentioned and explained to us numerous times, when you are outnumbered by women, you have no say in the conversation. They're going to watch what they want to watch. And that's the first time I watched that movie. And it just surprised me so much. That experience of watching it together with all of those people was just kind of one of those cinematic revolutions.
I'm pretty sure that's the second time you've said that tonight alone. Leave the man alone. He didn't do anything to you.
And I mean, I'm sure we have like a handful or more stories like that to tell about movies that we've seen or circumstances that we've seen movies in. But to talk about this film, the music never stopped. I feel like I already know your views on the film because of the kind of movie it is. So I want you to get out of the way, just say it.
Alright. Actually, I want you to say it. I wrote up some notes, and I'd like you to read from right here, just the name of the movie, and then my notes. My very extensive notes.
Douglas's very extensive notes. And this is on his HTC... Which one is this?
Desire HD
phone. It's got the gingerbread OS running on it. And the app that we're looking through is called Evernote. He under the music never stopped, He has one word, and that word is heart.
That is correct, Andrew.
This movie had a lot of heart. It also had J.K. Simmons, who I really love. I think he's a great actor, and he actually acted very well in this movie as well, which really I shouldn't be surprised at. This movie, funnily enough, I can't remember what I said at the trailer, but I remember going into this film that I wanted to watch this movie. I remember thinking that the trailer was great and really wanting to see it. And the movie was a little bit interesting in the way that it did its thing. And just based on what I kept saying while I was watching the movie, you probably got this vibe that it just felt, a lot of the time in this movie, it felt very, not necessarily one note, but I don't know, I'm just trying to make some sort of gesture here. It looks like he's pulling at his neck for some reason. I'm not sure what he's doing. Maybe it's some new kind of dance that I just don't know about because I'm not cool enough.
It's the neck pull.
The neck pull. The neck okay. pull. But this movie, it kept going in one direction, and that direction was trying to get me to feel sorry for these people. And if you look at movies like this and movies like, say, the best example is, the name of the movie is not Precious anymore. What's the name of that movie? Precious.
Push.
No, it's not called Push. Oh, it is Precious. Precious is what they ended up calling it?
Yeah, Push is the book.
Right, Push is the book and Precious is the movie. Okay, so yeah, if you look at, say, Precious, all of these bad things happen to Precious, and then in the end, there's one catastrophic piece of information that you get, and the only thing that you can say after that is, really? I didn't need that to feel sorry for them. You're just going overboard there. And that's what kept happening in this movie. They just kept trying and trying and trying, and you're just like, come on. I get it. He's not well. He will never be well. And the parents are always going to be sad because of this or whatever, you know? I just kept going and going and going. And it was just annoying that also, like Crash, a lot of what happened was fairly predictable. I never really enjoy that most of the time in movies. There's some movies that you'll have fun the whole way through and forget about that. But this movie is not one of those movies, because it's not very fun. Other than the fact that I can say that the soundtrack was kind of good, but that's about it. Thankfully, Damien is not here to slap me across the face
For
commenting on the soundtrack. But this movie really was, I'm not going to say it's bad, because it is not bad. We can talk about the list and all of that good stuff. So I'd say this movie is just painfully average.
I agree with you completely, but at the very same time, I feel like I was willing to feel sorry for these people a lot more than you were. And movies do that a lot of the time, where they set up this dreary premise and allow for a happy narrative, in that you enjoy every moment that you see this sick individual light up as he remembers something, and he starts to talk about that moment where he first heard the music, or he remembers the whole setting, and it becomes this moment of euphoria that you feel, the same moment that you can tell his parents are feeling, because they can see their son back for that song, the period of that song. And I enjoyed it just as much as the parents did. My only problem with this movie is that when this movie kept going, I felt like it just kept repeating its own gimmick as it was going along. Like, I know that there were more stories to tell, but at the same time, how many times did we hear the story of, I didn't get to see a Grateful Dead concert? And, I mean, I knew it was all culminating to that eventual moment of them actually going to see the Grateful Dead. And I thank this movie fantastically for introducing me to the Grateful Dead, because I had never heard of them before. Sadly.
That's not something you should admit. Just letting you know, Andrew.
Hey, I've admitted a lot of things on this podcast that I shouldn't admit. this one really matters at this point. I don't think I'll live down the rear window comment.
You know, I had forgotten about that. But that, however, ties back in with everything that has happened today. You don't like Rear Window, you don't like Bullet. I mean, I have to reverse everything that you say.
And of course, there's a Kubrick comment as well.
Oh, let's not even talk about that. Not liking Clockwork. What?
What's wrong with you? A space odyssey?
Well, okay, I cannot really wrong you for that. Or, not that I cannot wrong you, but I cannot speak to that, because up to this day, and this is one of my embarrassing admissions, I have not seen that film.
And this is when we need Jeff and Just Rob to come in and slap you and sit you down like a Clockwork Orange style, with your eyes like opened by some sort of device, and watch the movies, like all of the Kubrick films all at once.
Okay,
I'm sure you'd die at that point. But anyways, back to this movie. The music never stopped. As I said, the repetition is what killed this movie for me. While at the very same time, I just enjoyed most of those moments. So while I was enjoying it, I'm like, I'm enjoying it, but then I think to myself, didn't I see this 2 minutes ago? This very same moment, I saw it 2 minutes ago. But I enjoyed it. And that's why I kind of forgive this movie, while at the same time recognizing that it doesn't really leap out of the just a little over average section of movie recommendations. J.K. Simmons is fantastic. I really like the guy who played Gabriel. I don't know what his name is. And I also really liked J.K. Simmons' wife, because there's this one scene where she gets fed up with him and basically tells him to go fuck himself, and I really enjoy that moment.
This movie wasn't that good. This movie, I don't know, I didn't really like it that much. I was actually wondering, I was thinking that this movie sort of reminded me of Adam, except for the fact that Adam was really good. Adam was great. But not this one. Yeah, I'm done. I don't really want to say anything else about this movie.
I think otherwise, I just really like the idea of that whole thing that I mentioned in the beginning about art taking us back to that moment.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this movie is just a touch above average for me. Like, it's something that you'll enjoy renting and watching, but you won't ever buy and put on the shelf officially.
I hear you.
But I think that's about it then.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So, thanks for listening. Damien's missing, so we don't care what happened to him. Hopefully he's still alive, though. Douglas, you can find on Twitter. He's DJ, I lost his name. I'm on Twitter. I'm G-Man Reviews. You can find the podcast at gmanreviews.com, as well as on iTunes. Just search for Tump or the Unnamed Movie Podcast, you'll find it. And you can also find it on the podcast alley. Review us, rate us, we will talk about it on the podcast if you do so, because we really need them. Thanks for listening, and good night.